Welcome to the 472nd episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. Welcome, and thank you for listening. Well, it's springtime in Florida. Mangoes are getting bigger. The wind blows, and some of the little mangoes fall off. It's very disappointing, but we still have some hanging on, so that's good. And we harvested our first bananas. So that was really exciting, I believe. I'm not sure the variety. We planted these banana trees and they literally got knocked down, and we cut them down to the stalks after the hurricane, and they came back to life with their resiliency. And finally we've got bananas. So very exciting. I eat bananas every day. Most of the time I save my bananas for my dessert at night. I do this frozen banana dessert where I freeze bananas and chop them up, add them to a little jar with some frozen blueberries and some cacao powder, and make myself a soft serve. People will say, why don't you put it in a blender or, you know, an ice cream machine? And it's like, I don't have to clean that up. I have my little pint jar. I sit down and make the dogs a peanut butter bone. And so they have a peanut butter bone and I have my ice cream, and life is good for the last little bit of the evening. So give it a try. I think you'll like it. It got me off my ice cream addiction from way long time ago. So there you have it. As far as my running, you know, again, May 18th is the Cruel Jewel 56 miler with significant elevation gains. My running is progressing. I might be running more than walking now. Have been walking about 5 miles consistently during the week and 8 to 10 miles on the weekend, and gradually increasing the running proportion of that. I started out doing 30-second sessions and then have increased it to a couple minutes, to 3 minutes, some 4-minute sessions, but I'm really taking it easy. If I start to have some pings or twangs, I'm back and down. This past weekend, we went to a place called Celery Fields in Sarasota, which is the highest point in Sarasota. It's a limestone-made irrigation runoff fields that was done long time ago. And at one point there apparently was crops, and celery was part of it. But now it's this big mound of dirt that it has a circumference of a couple of miles, maybe not quite a couple miles, because we would go straight up the hill and then zigzag trails down to the bottom of the hill and then around and then up and down. So we were able to get, about 900 feet of elevation gain or so, which doesn't seem like a lot when we're looking at 16,000 here in a month or so, but it's certainly better than zero. So it was good to try my ankle out going up and down hills, and, I tolerated that, so I'm very happy about how things are coming along. I can picture myself towing the start line at Cruel Jewel now. And I can picture myself getting through Cruel Jewel now, which is great when it comes to my mental state. It's kind of funny, if you go onto the website for Cruel Jewel, one of the things it lists besides the elevation gain and the views is we do have venomous snakes, copperheads, rattlesnakes, water moccasins. I guess there's some bear perhaps, and I am just not a snake fan. And, you know, I've run actually up in that trail before and really didn't think too much about snakes, knew that they possibly could be there, but had really put them out of my mind until I saw that page. So I had to do a little bit of, mental work as far as the snakes and I, and a little research. I was given a homework assignment by my coach, Susan Donnelly, to look into when snakes come out and where I'm likely to see them. And of course, everybody knows on trails, you know, woods and wooded areas, rocky areas, stumps and things are places that snakes like to hide. But the question is, do they come out at night or are they more out in the day? So some snakes like to sun themselves more in the sun, and some like to kind of hide. And sometimes come out in the night, and it depends whether it's mating season or not mating season. The good news is that copperheads are the most abundant and they're the less venomous. Very few people die of a venomous copperhead bite, so I was happy to hear that. Rattlesnakes is a different animal, but the rattlesnakes are probably more likely to hide and stay away. Copperheads are a little bit more aggressive, apparently, none of which like to go after humans. They like to save their venom because they can only produce so much, and they like to save it for their food, which are typically rats and mice. And so if you, you know, do a lot of research like I have been doing to talk myself into how wonderful snakes are and how pretty they are, they are good for eating things that carry disease more so than snakes. So they have their place in the world, and they have their place on the trail, and I'm invading them when I go on the trail, and I'll look out for them and respect their territory, and I am very confident that they will respect my respect of them and not bite me. So there's that. And I'll keep going over that until we toe the line, May 18th. So may the force be with us all. I love salad for lunchtime. One of my favorite meals. If I have leftovers, I'll try to go through my leftovers and kind of alternate whether I have leftovers for dinner or leftovers for lunch, depending on how much the leftovers are. But I always want to get my greens in for lunchtime, and I just enjoy the raw salad aspect of a large salad. And I go home for lunch and make my salad every day, so it's made from scratch. So when people tell me they don't have time to make a salad, that's not true, because I take an hour lunch, and during that hour lunch, I throw the ball for the dogs and make my salad and eat my salad. So it is doable. People tell me that they don't get filled up on salad. It's the kind of salad that you make and how much salad that you eat. People tell me that they don't like to chew the greens. They'd rather do smoothies, but the people are okay chewing steaks or other type of things. And it's kind of funny when you think about a hamburger, you don't really have to chew it at all. A hamburger, you just kind of pull off and mush it around and swallow it. So I think that has contributed to some people's lack of salad chewing capabilities. I don't know. But I think, you know, people's eyes roll when they hear salad, and certainly big fellas think that they're not going to get full or be, you know, muscular if they're having a salad. So I'd like to kind of go through what I consider a salad and how you might build one that's actually tasty and healthy and keeps you full all afternoon. I know some people are going to say there are all kinds of salads out there, like macaroni salad or pasta salad and potato salad, but I'm just going to talk today about mainly a green salad, or the salads based with the bases or the large majority based in green. So let's talk a little bit about the greens type. You know, some people, a salad come to mind, that old iceberg lettuce. Iceberg lettuce is good to put on a hamburger, but it's not necessarily good for a large lunch salad. Iceberg lettuce actually has a large amount of nutrients, including the RDA for iron, but you have to eat a lot of it. So it's not without nutritional value. It has some fiber. It just doesn't pack many nutrients per pound or ounce, so to speak. So that is not usually one of my go-to lunch salads. Although if I have icebergs, I do like the taste of iceberg lettuce, and if I had some, I might mix in with my other greens. The other greens that you can buy, big boxes of mixed greens, which I like the best currently. When you look at, they have like little baby Swiss chard, kale, spinach, romaine. So it's a nice mixture of greens and little different textures. I like that a lot. Sometimes my basis is just plain old kale. Sometimes it's chopped up green cabbage as a base with red cabbage. Sprouts are a great addition to the basic greens of salad, because sprouts are nutrient-dense packed little first leaf. I usually, when I sprout, I grow my own sprouts, and so I usually have a jar going at any one time so I can pull a mixed sprout. And so I usually let them go to like the first leaf. And so there's a lot of nutrients per ounce in sprouts, so I add that in there. Again, if I have the option of putting some red and green cabbage, I often do. So I like a mixture of greens. It's, I guess, the bottom line for my salad. I usually use a bowl that's probably a 8 or 10 inch diameter. And so 2 to 3 big handfuls of greens fills the base of that. And then a handful of sprouts on top of that. The other thing good about sprouts, if you have a small appetite for salads, or are you somebody that chews quite a bit and thinks you'll get tired before you can finish the salad, sprouts, again, offer you nutrient-dense greens that you don't have to work at quite so hard. So they're a nice addition to the salad. Then I look at fillers, and almost always my salad has a colored pepper of sorts. So a colored bell pepper, red, yellow, orange, and sometimes green. I kind of prefer the colors. I go through spurts and then I'll crave a green pepper, but always I have a whole pepper in my salad. The majority of time I chop up a cucumber. I do buy organic vegetables, and so if the cucumber skin is just one of those long ones, I'll actually just leave the skin on, a little bit more fiber. If I have snow peas, I'll throw that in there. I consider that an addition. I like pickled onions on the salad because I have those in a jar. I can just kind of scoop those out. Tomatoes, beets, olives, put those all on there. And so those are my fillers. So I've got a pretty low calorie lunch here so far. So I've got to do something. I've got a lot of nutrients. I've got a lot of fiber, but I don't have a lot of calories. So if it's going to last me to dinner time, I need to put something else into it. And so that's where the calories start to come in. So a half avocado, which improves the absorption of fat-soluble vitamins. If I had tofu that was baked the night before, I may add that. You can eat tempeh raw, so that's an option. Beans, whether I cooked black or pinto beans or maybe edamame. If I have a sweet potato that's left over or a white potato, I chop that up into my salad cold. I don't even bother heating those things up. I will heat up leftover rice or quinoa and use that. So I use about a cup of either one of those to hook onto or to put onto the salad. And then we get onto the dressings. And here's where traditional salads start to fall apart. Well, the toppers did too. So if you were not plant-based and you were to have a chicken breast or beef or some other big greasy piece of salmon on top of the salad, then all of a sudden you've really increased your caloric content of the salad. My caloric increases there are modest. Depends on how, I still have to have a fair amount of those to get the calories up. But again, not associated with a whole lot of fat, and still very nutrient dense, high in protein for my addition, my add-ons. Even the peppers and the lettuce and all those other things have protein. So about a cup of vegetables, just the regular greens and peppers and things, each have about a gram of protein. So it all counts when people say they're not getting enough protein. It's baloney, and not real baloney, but just baloney. Looking at dressings, you want to avoid the stuff in a jar, the fake stuff, because usually the first ingredient is canola oil. If you like just vinegars, the California Balsamic Vinegars, californiabalsamic.com, I like a lot of their flavors. Sometimes I just use that and call it a day. But sometimes I like more of a combo. And actually, more often than not, I like some sort of a combo, whether I have the balsamic, California balsamic, and maybe a white balsamic, or maybe I add some mustard into that. Sometimes, I'll do a yogurt, nutritional yeast, and mustard. I've used fresh salsa. Sometimes I do a mixture with sriracha or tamari. Even if you have leftover pasta salad or macaroni salad, you can add some of that as your topper onto the salad that increases the caloric content, but it's not, you're going to get your nutrients with the greens and the other things. Today I had all those things on the bottom, plus I had tofu and grilled zucchini that I had left over. I put some of that on there. And then I had the quinoa that I had left over. And then I did a dressing of yogurt, mustard, and sriracha. So that was a almond milk-based yogurt. Kite Hill's the brand that I used. So it was delicious, filling. Had my apple afterwards, and I'm good for the afternoon. So when you're thinking about salad, kind of think in those terms of what you're going to do to make it filling and large enough that it, but not too caloric dense. So you want to keep the fat down. So I'm not one to throw nuts and seeds on very often because I might increase the fat content and it doesn't keep me full. I'd rather have something that I could chew, like the beans or quinoa or something along those lines. So there you have it. As I alluded to earlier, we went out to Celery Fields to run this Sunday, and by the time we walked the dogs in the morning and came home and had some breakfast, and we actually had a tofu scramble and some fruit before we took off to go to Celery Fields. And when we got there, it was about noon, and it's getting warm in Florida, so we were probably running in 80 degrees temperatures, and the hill has no trees on it whatsoever, so it is, or just nothing, the shade, no shade whatsoever, I should say. There was a bit of a breeze, but we're getting into Florida in sunshine and increased temperatures. It's a great way to start acclimating to the heat and start acclimating to the Florida sun by starting out in the spring when the sun's starting to come up, and it's a great source of vitamin D. I do not wear sunscreen. I acclimate as the spring comes into summer, so by the time it's summer, I don't burn. I do wear a hat, but I don't even wear sunglasses, and I enjoy that. I can see the terrain better with my contacts without sunglasses, so unless it's extremely bright for me, I don't usually require them. And I want to talk a little bit about vitamin D, because I think, you know, we saw people up there all covered up. We saw people in, you know, jog bras and short shorts, and we saw people covered from head to toe and their head covered up and everything else. I probably saw more people covered up than not covered up. But nevertheless, they're not getting their vitamin D, so I hope they're taking it. There is a large review that I'll link to the link some of the studies that look at vitamin D intake and health. I know a lot of people debate what vitamin D level is good. The number that you're looking for in a blood test of 25 hydroxy vitamin D is between 20 and 50. There are a lot of people that walk into my office with vitamin D levels less than 30. Again, people wear sunscreen, people cover up, people aren't in the sun as much as they need to be. People refer to vitamin D as a hormone because it actually has to be metabolized in the body, in the skin, and in the kidney to its most active form. But there's no feedback loop as far as vitamin D goes like other hormones. And again, the majority of vitamin D that we get is from sunlight or taking a supplement. The other, and that source is vitamin D3, when you get it from the sun or when you get it from a supplement. Vitamin D2 can actually come from foods such as mushroom and fish, I suppose. It is less effective. It has to be converted. Both vitamin D and D2 and D3 have to be converted by hydroxylation to the active form 25-hydroxy vitamin D in the liver. And from there, it goes into the circulation. The circulation is where you get the blood measurement. So when you get your 25 hydroxy vitamin D level, you can tell whether your level is normal or not, being 30 to 50. 50 seems to be the magic number. When people in a lot of broad observational studies have a vitamin D level of 50, they had less side effects of COVID. They had less COVID. Their immune system seemed to function better. They had less cancers, less diabetes. So I don't look at vitamin D as being bone health. I look at vitamin D with everything else that it does. 25 hydroxy vitamin D is then hydroxylated in the kidneys to 25 hydroxy vitamin D1, which is becomes calcitriol, which is the physiological active form. When you look at vitamin D levels and cancer protection, typically it's more than the basic, you know, 30 nanograms per milliliter that is the bottom limit for having a normal level for bone health. The darker your skin is, the more hard it is to absorb vitamin D. And there has been observational studies looking at Indians, Hispanics, African Americans that have low vitamin D levels and associated levels of increased cancers. So, you know, it's really important if your skin is darker to have your vitamin D levels checked as well. the Vital trial actually looked at this and showed a marked decrease in cancer in these populations that had adequate vitamin D levels. There's drugs out there for cancer, lung cancer, different cancers called checkpoint melanomas. Aggressive cancers, checkpoint inhibitors are used as therapies that basically make a cancer more visible to our own immune system so that our body can attack the cancer and destroy it. And these cancers have been very effective, again, in melanomas and in lung cancer, and has actually been some of the bigger advances in anti-cancer therapies. The problem is that people become resistant to them. And it's been shown in some of these reviews that if people have adequate vitamin D levels, they're more likely to be effective. There's less side effects from these medications, and they actually have improved cell death for cancer cell death and decrease mortality. So cancers that have been looked at, breast cancer deficiency of vitamin D is associated with higher grade tumor, especially in young women. Treatment for triple negative breast cancer seems to be better if vitamin D levels are adequate. Even glioblastomas, a very aggressive brain cancer, is associated with a better outcome if the vitamin D levels are high. Melanoma, decreased risk of developing melanoma if you have adequate vitamin D. So we tell people to cover up so they don't get melanoma. We drive their vitamin D levels down, and then they get melanoma. I've never really bought into the effect of melanoma and sun. There's a lot of controversy around some of the studies. Most people get terrible melanomas where they weren't getting sunburn. It is probably much more related to your immune system and, again, a host of effects, not just the sun. But nevertheless, low vitamin D levels in melanoma are associated with a poor, lower survival. Adding vitamin D increases the ability of the body to get rid of cells called apoptosis. Some chemotherapy drugs have some severe side effects, and in with regards to multiple myeloma, the addition of vitamin D seems to decrease the neuropathy associated with the chemotherapy drugs. It also seems to help with radiation side effects. There was one observational study showing a 37% decrease in the incidence of, actually 15 observational studies showing a 37% decrease in ovarian cancer with adequate vitamin D levels. So everyone's worried about early detection and early treatment, but why don't we just prevent things with getting a little vitamin D therapy? When vitamin D comes from the sun, it is the UVB radiation that actually helps to convert vitamin D levels in our skin. So, again, we are way too afraid of the sun and need to use it to our advantage. The least you can do is get mid-morning sun, afternoon sun to increase your vitamin D exposures, but certainly have your vitamin D levels checked. Most people can tolerate 5,000 international units a day of vitamin D3. I'm not making recommendations to anyone. This is not medical advice, but something that I actually do, despite being outside on the weekends a lot. I run typically very early in the morning as the sun's just coming up, so my vitamin D levels can be on the lower side of normal without supplementation. So I think it's good. Risk of vitamin D supplementation, minimal risk of kidney stones, but that's in very, very high levels. And I have actually seen pretty high levels of vitamin D and no kidney stones in my practice of people that have cancer that are taking vitamin D. So I'm not too worried about those side effects. I think, again, the risk way outweighs the benefits outweigh the risk. And again, with regards to infections such as the feared COVID, vitamin D has been shown to be beneficial. So I'm taking my vitamin D and recommending that to my patients. The other thing I recommend to my patients is cardiovascular fitness. multiple studies have been shown to show a decrease in morbidity, which means diseases and mortality from those diseases and overall mortalities from adequate cardiovascular fitness. There was a meta-analysis that looked over 20.9 million people, 199 studies. And again, there was a strong prediction in decreasing morbidity and mortality with cardiovascular fitness. They looked at people that were at normal weight versus overweight, if they were fit or not fit. They looked at people with illnesses and the mortality associated with them. One very important thing that was noted with each increase of one met of fitness, and that's metabolic equivalent as far as the testing. So three mets is the equivalent of making your bed. So every one met that you can improve your physical capabilities. And these studies, a lot were done with VO2 max tests and, you know, really physiological testing as opposed to just, you know, looking at your watch. But with each met of improvement, there was a significant decreased risk of cancer and all-cause mortality, despite overweight, underweight, and so forth. There was associated decrease in high blood pressure, depression, heart failure, kidney disease, colon cancer, prostate cancer, skin cancer, all cancer mortality, stroke. And this improvements were seen with as little as walking at 50% of your predicted max heart rate for, you know, again, small periods of time. So any walking that you can do benefits. I know people are going to, you know, I've had this in my practice all the time. How little can I do? You know, my, you know, efforts being trying not, you know, people are afraid to wear out their feet or something. They're afraid to do it. And our wellness challenge this month is walking a 5K every day or more. But, you know, that is why it's so important to walk every day and to walk outside and get your vitamin D. Is a win-win effect. In our fitness challenge, I have people document on our personal or private Facebook group how far they went and how long it took them by submitting a photo or a screenshot of their fitness app or wearable device. Do I not believe them? Of course I believe them, but it keeps people honest in the fact that to see what they're actually doing, because I have so many people that come into my office and say, oh, I walk every day. Well, it's not always every day. Well, here lately, it hasn't been every day. I walked twice last week. Well, I haven't been walking, you know, and the more we talk, the less they actually walk. And so people really are not mindful of how much exercise they actually do. Very few people are committed daily walkers. And we're trying to get that because I believe it is so important. So by documenting it, people can actually see, and they're made to look at what they're actually doing. You know, people don't have concept of how fast they walk, and there is some benefit as well to faster walking for neuromuscular adaptations and overall balance, you know, to increase your muscle mass and your slow twitch fiber and your mitochondria. So yes, a stroll is better than nothing, but increasing your pace is also very important. So by documenting how fast you're going and seeing that every day, you can actually see some improvements. I love to see it. You know, I look at every activity that I do, and we sit and look at the stats afterwards. What was our pace? And even if it's just fun by seeing how well my dog Trio did on his walks. You know, I talk a lot on my daily blog, and if you'd like to subscribe to our newsletter and the daily blog, I'd love that, over at drdulaney.com, DocTorDulaney. But when Trio and I start out with Trio in the morning, and he does the first 2.5, and Sophie does the second 2.5. And depending if, you know, if we get started before daylight significantly, we don't run into that many people, so he does better. He's not really reactive to squirrels or rabbits. Rabbits are more in the before daylight. Squirrels are when the daylight is, but he's not real reactive to that. He's not reactive to people for the most part. But if he sees a little dog on a leash, then he can become reactive. And so we're trying to do some training by turning around, letting him see, maybe stop, letting him see them from a distance so he can have some treats and calmly start to decrease his fear of seeing other dogs on leashes. He's okay with a dog in the yard. So again, the more we see, the slower our pace goes. We may have to stop and do some, you know, sit, stay, or walk the other direction. And, you know, so we have a slower pace for that mile and or that walk, depending on what we see. But it's fun to look to see what we do. And it's fun to see, you know, what, you know, 3-0 had a good day. We walked faster, or I had a bad day because of my ankle, or I'm improving because of my pace. So all the feedback can be used in a positive way. And again, you realize that you're not walking a 4-minute mile, as some people have tried to tell me that they can do. Roger Bannister would be impressed. But it's kind of funny. My patients, for the most part, know that I run. But because they don't run, they don't have concept of pace and time. So a lot of wild numbers get thrown at me as far as what people actually accomplish. And I can look at them dead on and say that's impossible. And they look at me like I'm accusing them of something. But it truly is impossible when people try to tell me they're walking a 6-minute mile or something along those lines. Because most people can't do that calculation quite so easy. But, you know, you can look at your watch and you can look at, you know, the GPS is the way to look at it. But if you're walking 15 minutes and you've not accomplished a mile, it's not a 15-minute mile. But I digress. So walk, track it, keep a calendar, walk daily, get your vitamin D, and check out our website at drdelaney.com and see how you can become a member of our practice and get in all the wellness challenges that we have to offer. So if you're an outlier, check us out. Thanks for listening.